It's a little known fact that Cheerscast is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Frasier's been captivated by a new theory of masculinity, which suggests within each man is a hidden primal beast, softened by years of civilization and sensitivity. He saw it on Sally Jesse.
Yes, and they got a really cool name for this beast. It's called the inner hairy man.
Or in your case, dear, the receding hairy man.
You want to go where everybody knows your name.
Hello and welcome back to Cheerscast, the podcast where everybody knows your name. I'm your host, Ryan Daly, and joining us for the second episode of Season 10, please welcome back once more the host of Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, and someone who knows a thing or two about road trips. It's Rick Heineken. What's up, Rick?
Well, let me get my road beer ready here and get ready to talk to you about a little bit of a road trip here. I'm sitting here in my Route 66 t-shirt. I got my road beer in hand, and I'll tell you a little bit about it. I just got back from a road trip. I had to help my friend move from North Dakota back to Oregon. And as we're driving back, I all of a sudden exclaimed very loudly to my friend, "Oh my God, we're in Montana. That means that I can get cold smoke beer." And he is not a beer drinker, but he looks at me, he's like, "What?" Dude, there is a beer that is made in Montana. It is their table beer in Montana. It's at every restaurant. You get everywhere. It's in Montana. You cannot buy it anywhere else. And it's called Kettle House Cold Smoke Scotch Ale. And this is one of my favorite beers in all the world. It is just perfect. It is just that nice, sweet taste. It's got a real good flavor in the beer. Not too hoppy. Not too bitter. It just hits all of the right notes. And you cannot buy it anywhere else except in Montana. So we pull up into our lodging for the night, eat dinner at that place. And I'm like, "Do you have cold smoke?" "Well, of course we have it on tap." Keep them coming. I had two at dinner. I had one before I went to bed. And we also went out to a nearby store and I bought myself a couple of packs of it. So that is why I'm drinking a beer that I got on a road trip just for this episode.
Well, that looks fascinating. I'm liking the can, but you have to edify me and our listeners. Like, how does one make a cold smoke beer, or what defines a cold smoke beer?
Kettle House Brewing Company calls it cold smoke Scotch Ale, and I would love to tell you more about exactly what that means, except I can't, except that it is darn tasty. It's really a Scotch Ale.
Okay.
The cold smoke is interesting because you drink this, and you're like, this is cold. And yeah, I'm getting a little about that smoky taste.
Like the scotch part of it, yeah.
Sure. And it's just tasty. And this is their table beer, and it's fantastic, and I love it. So I am sharing one of my small pack of beers that I got for the show tonight because I appreciate you, my friend. I appreciate you and our listeners.
Well, shout out to the 1,300 residents of the state of Montana for their great beer.
Once again, Kettle House Cold Smoke Scotch Ale.
Fantastic, fantastic. I'm glad I decided to go with the road trip thing for the intro instead of talking about your inner hairy man, but that might be giving away too much for this one.
Well, at least it's not like you and being a receding hairy man, so.
As I said, we're up to Season 10, Episode 2, Get Your Kicks on Route 666. Written by Dan O'Shannon and Tom Anderson, directed by James Burrows. The original air date was Thursday, September 26th, 1991. It's the time of the year when Frasier feels compelled to assert his masculinity, and as he calls it, find his inner hairy man. He invites Sam to join him on a cross-country road trip to experience life on the highway. Norman Cliff joined them too, because what else do they have to do? While Sam is on the road and Woody is on vacation, Carla enlists her nephew Frankie to bartend. Frankie is so attractive, though, that he becomes a distraction for Rebecca and Lilith and every other woman in the bar besides Carla. 4 days into the trip, Sam falls asleep behind the wheel and runs the car off the road. They accidentally break the key off in the ignition and lock themselves out of the car. Alone in the desert, Frasier worries that his quest to find his inner hairy man is going to get him killed. The next morning, he, Sam, and Cliff wake up to find Norm missing. They spread out to search for him just as Norm returns in a golf cart he rented from the desert resort he'd discovered after wandering away from the others in the middle of the night. The same resort he stayed at while letting them sleep on the dirt. All right, Rick, what did you think about this one?
This is a very strange and weird one. With all of the action taking place, majority of it, away from the bar, in a car, you have these people outside of their comfort zone. And we're going to get to it, too. But first thing that's really on the mind, Norm does not get his beers in this episode. I mean, that's the big thing right there. But it just is a weird way of looking at all these guys in a different setting than you've ever really seen them before. For the most part, you look at these guys, and except for Cliff, who's got a job where he goes to different places, you don't see these guys living their lives necessarily in a car. You see Sam in his car, but that's very specific. Yes, you know that Frazier's got a nice car he drives, but then just getting them all together in a car, it's weird. It's strange. It's still funny. It's enjoyable, and it's nice to see them trying different things, but it is different getting them out of the bar, and I don't necessarily know if I like that or not.
Yeah, I mean, this is an episode I always remember, and I think it's because it's one that's, like you said, it's so far removed from the Cheers set and that location. It's sort of like the one where they go skydiving and everything. I just remember because it's a set that we never see before and won't ever see again. And you're right, like, we get multiple scenes where they're just all packed into this car, into Cliff's car they end up taking because he's got a station wagon. But they purposely set those scenes at night so that it's very dark. So you really just have the light on their faces. So
yeah,
there isn't anything else to distract from the fact that they're just sitting in a prop car. And then for the last couple of minutes, they were out on this set, like this desert roadway or whatever, just kind of out in the middle of nowhere, where I didn't notice it myself when watching it. But according to IMDb's trivia, there are a couple moments where you can actually see the carpet or the rug of the set or whatever is pulled away. That's just that's simulating the sand or the dirt. Yeah, it's an interesting one. There's a lot of parts in this I like it, but it's also one of those where it's okay, they're just let's just go away and let's do stuff.
Yeah, it's not the traditional Cheers ensemble cast. Woody's not there. The ladies are separated from the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the magic that makes Cheers Cheers is not there. And yet, it's still enjoyable because we're in season 10 and, back off. Let's try something new. And it's fine for that. It's just traditional Cheers episode. This is not.
Right. I also, we'll see how I feel about this by the end of it, but it kind of feels like the ending, it ends because they run out of time. I don't necessarily know that we get a catharsis or anything that maybe, if there was really some point to Frasier's quest, other than they're we need to get them on the road for some reason, it seems like it's not committed to that enough to give that a resolution.
I can agree with that. And I think when we get to who we think the best character in the show is, I think we'll actually start to pull that apart a little bit, because that's the only thing I can get to a resolution.
Yeah.
Who's kind of the winner of this weird thing that they're doing? And there's only one real winner. I guess that's it. But yeah, they don't make it to their destination. You assume that the trip is over because the car is pretty much destroyed at that point in time. So I don't know.
Well, let's get into it then. For our teaser, it starts, Rebecca is taking a pregnancy test, picking up off the plot line from the previous episode where Sam and Rebecca are trying to have a baby. The test is negative, and she's like, oh, well, can't expect to get pregnant on the first time. And Sam was like, well, I thought that's what the fourth and fifth times were for. And Norm just kind of shaking his head. He's like, man, Cliff, can you imagine a fifth time?
Cliff, I'm only up to three. That one stops me every time, and that's a real good contender for the probably best home run of the episode, really.
Cliff has a lot of gems in this one. That was actually my biggest surprise.
It's just a little subtle, I'm only up to three, and you have to stop and think about it for a bit. He means three total, and maybe he's stretching that.
Right. At the other side of the bar, Frazier and Lilith are there because Lilith is now a regular cast member, as we've said. She's got her name in the opening credits. And she gives Rebecca some advice, very scientific, clinical base. You know, she needs to chart her temperature and like plot what does she say?
Make a simple plot point graph and chart your basal temperature at a fixed hour each morning. After a couple months, a pattern will emerge, thereby making your peak fertility days absolutely predictable.
Over a couple of months, she's like, spend 90 days on this chart in order to find out when's the best time.
So let me ask you really quickly, what's your basal temperature?
I don't think that's something I want to disclose on the podcast.
Fair enough. The basal temperature, the lowest body temperature attained during rest, typically measured after a period of sleep. Yeah, that's a closely guarded secret of my family as well.
And Sam is just like, wow. He's like, you guys really had to go through all of that to get pregnant? And Trey's like, no, we just got ripped one night and tore one off.
Remember that, sugar? Huh?
He's very proud, and she kind of smiles too, like she does remember it. After the opening credits, Rebecca comes out and she's passing out postcards from Woody. This is our way of explaining that Woody Harrelson isn't in this episode at all. Apparently he's on vacation. We don't know where he's going or why or what the circumstances is about this.
I just assumed that he was at home. He's back in Hanover and he's sending everybody postcards.
Probably, yeah, because he goes on vacation with Kelly later on in the season. But I assume Woody Harrelson had to miss shooting this week because he was doing one of the movies that came out around this time. Like maybe he had to do like reshoots or something. The same year he was in the movie L.A. Story, a Steve Martin one. He only had a small part in that one, so maybe that's something. He was also in Doc Hollywood with Michael J. Fox. He had a bigger part in that one, so I don't know exactly how the schedule would have lined up when they were shooting these.
It really feels like this was a plan, though. I mean, they wrote this very specifically for him not to be there. Yes, he could have been on the road with the guys, but five people in a car, that's going to get really tight.
Right.
So I just really see it as everything in this episode really is designed around the fact that, well, Woody's not there, so we have X, Y, and Z.
Right, right. And the reason why we get our guest star with Carla's nephew and that whole thing. Yeah. But anyway, as she's passing out the postcards, they all get the same, or what we find out is they all get the same message because Rebecca reads it. She's like, "Dear Miss Howe, I'm having a great time on vacation. I miss everyone there at Cheers, but I miss you most of all. Love, Woody." Mm-hmm. And they're like, "Sam, what does your postcard say?" "Dear Sam, I'm having a great time on vacation. I miss everyone at Cheers, but I miss you most of all. Love, Woody." And Norm says, "Dear Mr. Peterson, I'm having a great time on vacation. I miss everyone there at Cheers, but I miss you most of all. Love, Woody." And they're like, "Cliff, what does yours say?" He's like,
"Dear Mr. Clavin, I'm having a great time on vacation. Love, Woody."
Love, Woody. It's funny because it's like it almost catches Cliff off guard that he realizes, like, hey, he didn't say.
And you see it coming. We got the funny of three. So how are we going to cap this one off? Oh, we know what's going to happen with Cliff.
Right. Yeah. Right, exactly. Frasier and Lilith come in. She orders a drink and orders one for her Neanderthal husband. But this time, not an insult. Frasier is now obsessed with this new theory of masculinity that within every man is a hidden primal beast buried under like centuries of civilization and
sensitivity. Yeah. He saw it on Sally Jesse.
He saw it on Sally Jesse. Yeah. He's like, they call it the inner hairy man. She's like, yeah, saw it on Sally Jesse Raphael. So he's playing this, she's like, tell them about your field trip. Cause he's trying to, like, he's like, this is a serious, you know, mature adult thing. And so she's like, yeah, it's very childish. Tell them about your field trip. So he explains to Sam, he's just going to get in the car and go. He's going to take his car out on the open road, and just sort of roaming and exploring and seeing if he can just kind of handle the unencumbered, unstructured life that presents going away for, he plans for like a week. He's canceled his appointments that week. And he invites Sam to come along. He's like,
because he gets a little nervous when he drives at night.
Yeah. It's okay. His little quest for, you know, to discover this masculinity, but he can't drive at night. He gets scared.
Yeah, to be fair, the original concept there, I like it. Yeah, Frasier and Sam have a very good relationship. They really do. I think you could almost say that on the bar, they are the best of friends just from their time with Diane,
right,
if nothing else. But I could see those two just doing a road trip. And I think that it would be definitely more interesting than what we got.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be their own kind of quibbles and everything, but I think it would be fun. And I think that they would have enjoyed it with each other.
Right. Yeah. Like taking them out particularly, but so same as like, you know, Woody's on vacation. I don't know if I can leave the bar for a week. And Carla's like, well, you know, her nephew, Frankie, will fill in. Although he's never been in a bar. He doesn't have experience. But how bad could it be? And Sam is like, look, I love your family as much as anybody. This is my livelihood. I can't turn this over to somebody that inexperienced just because you like them. And she's like, well, he'll work for minimum wage. And Sam just turns to Fraser, I'm in.
Just how quick was he really to drop good business manager owner principles and like, I just can't do this. I can't leave my business alone. Oh, he'll work for minimum wage. Let's do this.
So where are we going to go? And Sam or Fraser's like, the location doesn't matter. It's a spiritual journey. It's a heroic quest.
Yeah.
And Sam is like, well, you know, if we drive to California, we can see Disneyland. And
ooh, yes.
Fraser, Kelsey Grammer's line reading, just Disneyland. Ooh.
So excited. Any road trip that ends with me in Disneyland, yes. And I would sound exactly like Fraser, so I'm sorry.
And from across the bar, Cliff pipes in and he's like, wow, a road trip to Disneyland. That sounds fun. And he gets up and starts walking over to them and he turns to Norm. He's like, hey, you gonna join us, Norm?
Wait, Cliff, wait.
He's already invited himself along and sits down next to Fraser.
And both Fraser and Sam are like, wait a second. Can the adult in the room please stand up and say no? Oh, there's no adult in the room. Okay, well, I guess this is happening now.
And Fraser's like, I don't think we can fit this many people in our car. He's like, well, Cliff's like, we'll take my car. He's like, I got plenty of vacation time coming to me. And they're like, is that true? He's like, yeah, my supervisor tells me all the time, every day.
Nobody wants Cliff around. Nobody wants Cliff.
But Norm is like, I don't know if I can go. I don't know if I want to spend 6 hours sitting in the car. And they're like, yeah, it'll probably be more like 10 hours. He's like, oh, okay. I'm in.
Okay, I'm there. I don't think I can handle sitting still for 6 hours a day. It's more like 10. Okay, then I'm in.
And we get a little bit of filler in here for stuff that they're going to end up arguing about later on. But Sam talks about going on a road trip when he was in his baseball days with his friend Buck and everything.
Hitchhiking.
Oh, yeah, hitchhiking. Yeah. And they talk about going to see like Cadillac Ranch out in the Merrimack Caverns, where Cliff mentions that he lost a Hopalong Cassidy watch when he was younger.
Because it slipped off his tiny wrists. Because as a youth, he had very five bones. I can tell you how many people mistook me for royalty. What a line.
And Lilith is watching this exchange from afar and just like, give me strength. And the guys are so excited about getting on the road and find their manhood, like real manly men, to which Norm adds, just like those chicks in Thelma and Louise.
Now we have something that's funky. And was it on your copy as well, where it just does a weird cut?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Right before we started recording, I kind of did a little research. Unlicensed music. The Wanderer by Dion was playing there, and I found a couple of not complete little clips where you see the car driving down the road, and all four guys are singing The Wanderer, and they're singing it badly and off key, and everybody's kind of singing their own part. At least that's what I can kind of pick up from like the little. It seriously was a bunch of jumbled clips that I saw that on.
I've seen a version where that's in place, like I've seen that like the thing, but you only hear the saxophone part of the music and then just kind of singing over it. So I wonder if that had to be reinserted. Like they didn't use the actual song, but they just replicated the saxophone beat for 19 seconds or something and had them badly singing the lines over.
And then even with that, they still had to cut it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because what we get on our side is just it goes from them cheering to all of a sudden a cut where the music has stopped in the car and they're like, hey, what happened to the song?
Yeah.
And it is a weird, very odd cut.
In the credits on IMDb, they don't credit the Dion version.
Right.
It has the songwriter, Ernie Maresca or something. But it says performed by Ted Danson, Kelsey Grammer, George Wendt, and John Ratzenberger.
Yeah.
Because those are the only ones you hear singing something close to the lyrics or the vocals. And then, you know, of course, the song starts to die because the 8-track player kind of eats the cassette. And I love that he's like, yeah, there's a butter knife in the glove compartment. You can get it out of there.
And they pop it out. They pop it out. And well, what are we going to do now? Well, we still got AM. So he doesn't even have the FM. This is 1990, Cliff. Oh, my God.
AM radio. And then there's this whole thing. It's like, how far have we traveled? They're like about 100 miles. And Cliff goes, no, that minus 38. And they're like, why? He's like, well, the trip meter resets at 38. He's like, and Sam's like, okay, so what's 100 minus 38? It's like, you guys can't count that?
But Norm says, well, just drive another 38 miles, and then we know it'll be 100.
And Sam is like, I didn't know you're good at math. I mean,
yeah, well, you know, I used to be an accountant.
It's that hard for these guys to count that high. 62.
And even the accountant is right. Takes the accountant, Norm, of course, takes the lazy route right. About how to fix this.
Yeah. It's like, you don't actually have to do the math, just find a workaround. So.
Right.
And then Frasier is, so the placement for this scene, at least, Cliffy's driving, Sam is riding shotgun, and in the back you've got Norm and Frasier. And Frasier is now reading a book. It's called Iron John, and it's basically sort of psychological theory, similar to what they're going on. And Norm is like, I can never read without getting sick. And he's like, you know, the car is bouncing, your eyes try to follow the words around. And then he talks about the smell of gas fumes. And then pretty soon you start to feel sick and you start to sweat. And as he's reading this, you just see Frasier get to the point where he just kind of slams the book shut. He's like, well, that's it. He's like, I'm sick.
So I'm guessing he was reading the actual Iron John book, a book about men by poet Robert Bly. And according to my minimal research on Wikipedia, it's an exegesis of Iron John, a parable belonging to the Grimm's fairy tales by German folklorist Brothers Grimm, about a boy maturing into adulthood with the help of the wild man. There we go.
And then we cut back to Cheers. Now, at some point in this, we kind of find it like the guys have been gone for 4 days already. So they've been gone for a while. But now back at the bar, we've got Rebecca and Lilith both staring at Carla's very hunky nephew. and Frankie Lizzaponi is played by Anthony Adabo. He was in a ton of like soap opera stuff. All My Children, Guiding Light, The Bold and the Beautiful. But like later 90s and early 2000s era, like well after this episode is when he started doing a lot of these things. But lots of TV and TV movie stuff, not big stuff, but yeah, just kind of, yeah.
But he fits the bill. Mm-hmm. He's tall. He's a little darker complexion, a little bit of that Italian kind of look to him, wears the tight shirts and looks like he's well built. So yeah, he is. He has signed the brief of the good-looking hunk in the bar.
Yeah, yeah. To use the parlance of the time, the casting director understood the assignment.
Yep.
So, and Rebecca kind of looks back at Lilith. She's like, what? And Lilith's like, I didn't say anything. She's like, you think I have the hots for Carla's nephew? She's like, I didn't say that. She's like, well, I do. And Lilith's like, man, no kidding.
No kidding.
And then they start this kind of thing. Rebecca's like, well, so do you. It's so obvious. And you're married, too. That's so slutty.
What about you? You're ogling him, and meanwhile, you're trying to conceive a child with another man.
And Rebecca responds, yes, but he's not my husband, so I'm not a slut.
God bless Rebecca and her own mathematic genius in her head there. 2 + 2 equals a bunch of apples, I guess.
Lilith and Rebecca, then they're talking about how, you know, it doesn't matter if you're in a committed relationship, you're married or you're fine, you can still appreciate a man's butt if it's nice. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
Carla's like, hey, I agree with that. I'm totally with you. And they talk about you can like a guy's eyes. And Carla's like, oh, the eyes are nice, but they don't compare to a good butt. And she's like, and who are we talking about anyway? And they're like, your nephew, Frankie. And Carla recoils kind of in disgust. It's like, that's sick. And Lilith is like, Carla, as a woman, surely you can see how your nephew would be considered desirable. And Carla's like, sure, you think like that and you end up with Woody's family.
Good line. Carla's got some great lines as well in this one, too. She really does.
Yeah. And they're like, you know, you're right. You're acting like a bunch of construction workers. And they're like, yeah, we shouldn't be, you know, subjecting him to this.
Yeah, we're treating men the way that we hated to be treated by them. Oops, I dropped my purse.
He's walking by. Rebecca drops her purse, and he bends over to pick it up so that they can see it. And then he hands it back to her, and then the purse goes down again. And he...
Yeah, the first time it was, I think it was Lilith that threw the purse down. And then the second time, Rebecca grabs the purse and throws it down again.
And she just throws it over.
Yeah, throws it.
It drops, and he brings it back. And then as he's walking around the bar, you see four or five ladies all sitting at the bar, lying, all just... purses just dropped.
Right over their shoulder. Yeah. Yeah, right over their shoulders. And all of them ogle and oogle as he bends over. Great.
Back on the road now, Sam is now driving with Norm's shotgun. Cliff is in the back. Frazier is in the same seat, the back left. And Norm is kind of asking the guys about the last time they cried. You know, just, you know, have a nice... I mean, there's a lot of stuff they could be going with this. And it's kind of like interesting... Cliff is talking about the last time he cried, he thinks was the night of his junior prom. And Norm's like,
Cliff, not the story where you got stood up and you had to take your ma and everybody laughed at you and pantsed you. No, I said the junior prom.
And he tells Frazier, he's like, yeah, see, ma put a boutonniere on me and stabbed me in the chest. And I got a staph infection.
The ongoing saga of Cliff and his myriad of diseases.
Kids and parasites, don't get me started.
Oh, don't get me started.
And then they ask Frazier, and Frazier's like, you know, he cried when the day they left for the trip because his son gave him a picture, and he's like, that made you cry. He's like, oh, it was so beautiful. And this
part, good luck finding your hairy man.
Yeah, yeah. And this part I certainly relate to, and like I've heard it, like when Reese was born, I cried every day for the first month, and you become so much more emotional. And I may have told the story on this podcast. I don't remember. I told it a couple of times, but like the most absurd thing, like a week after he was born, I was watching Terminator 2 Judgment Day. And at the climax of that movie, when at this point we've established that the Arnold Schwarzenegger, his killer
spoilers,
robot has become the surrogate father for John Connor, but the threat of nuclear war will exist as long as the Terminator is alive, so they have to sacrifice him. So John has to push the button to lower his new father into this molten steel and describe. And I'm holding my son, week old, sobbing, bawling my eyes out, looking at the TV going, this is a metaphor for us someday.
Folks, what you heard there is correct. Your host has just admitted that he sees himself as the T-1000 and that his son as the future for all mankind. So I'm not saying that he has got a massive ego or anything, but I don't know how to finish the sentence.
I was going to suggest that I just believe that my son will pull the plug on me at some point in the future. Now, subconsciously, I might have been thinking I'm some great warrior Adonis as Schwarzenegger, but
sure.
Sure, go with that.
No, having a daughter of my own, I am right there with you. There's a lot of times where something catches my eye. It's a little less now that she's a teenager and
we can
talk over, you know, I'm on a way on a trip or I'm on a road somewhere and she sends me a text and it's like I can respond back to her, call her anytime I want. But yeah, there are certain things where it's like, you miss her or she's gone during the day or she does something that you're very proud of. And it's I get it. And it's something you don't think of. I'm never going to have a kid. I'm never going to feel like that. Whatever. It hits you when you don't expect it.
It's just an emotional rawness that you're not prepped for. So that anything gets in there. And then Norm, you know, we need a bit of levity here. So Norm says that he cried during this time when they found out that
we thought Vera was pregnant, and then it turns out she wasn't. Oh, I'm sorry, Norm. You never told me about that, buddy.
He's like, well, she didn't tell me until after the wedding. I think I cried for a week.
Well, it turns out she was lying.
Yeah.
She didn't tell me until after the wedding. Must have cried for a week. It's a perfect set because you lean up and like, oh, I'm feeling sorry for him. And at the back of your mind, you're like, Wait a minute. She was lying, and here he comes. She didn't tell me that until after the wedding. It was, okay, she tricked him. Nice. All right.
Which he's made that assertion before that she tricked him into the marriage. Yeah. And they're like, what about you, Sam? When was the last time you cried? And Sam, at this point, is just his head is down. They're like, oh, look at that. He fell asleep.
That's so cute. Guys should see him. He's sleeping like a little baby.
And we get a cut to a second unit shot of a car pulling off into, the desert road. Yeah,
I have to say something here. This is the part, and I'm saying this about Cheers. This is a part where it broke credibility for me. Because of all of them, Sam is the one that I just don't see falling asleep at the wheel. Yes, he's not driving his own car, so maybe he's got his guard down. But you know how much he respects his car. You know he would never do that in his own car. And you would think that he just would not do that. It doesn't seem like that's the type of person who would fall asleep. I could actually see it from any of the other guys. I think it would have been a little bit better with Frasier to be there and him being the one to fall asleep. That could have made sense, especially if he's been thinking of his kid or something like that. But Sam just falling asleep, that just didn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I kind of agree with that. And that would have been an interesting development for Frasier with this being his journey. And if he's the one who ends up, I kind of wondered if the fact that they get stranded out in the desert was just because they had to film that scene and they're in California. That's where they see something.
I can see how they get to the crash happening. I just the person who they chose to fall asleep is that's the weird bit.
And it's not obviously it's not a violent crash. They just spin off the road, into the dirt. But when we cut back, we're now in a set designed to look like the side of the road. It's all rocky and arid and everything like that.
It's one of the leftover misused set from MASH that they decided to just kind of pull out a moth, and it doesn't look like it's aged well.
They got the hood popped open, and they're like, what does it look like? And Frasier's like, well, we've got some burnt meat in here. Just Cliff's hobo steak, and he's been cooking and driving at the same time. And Frasier's got a good line. He's like, at the risk of finding out the answer, why would you do something so stupid?
Oh, well, you cook in there. You see, you put your foot on the engine, and then you can drive and cook at the same time. Oh, hey, it looks like the vegetable kebabs are about done.
Which he pronounces kebabs or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, kebabs.
Yeah.
Maybe a little too crisp.
A little crisp. Yeah.
A little story about this. I was in the Army Reserves, and we had to do a two-week stint over in Devil's Lake, North Dakota. Mm. And we were getting some equipment from a unit in South Dakota, and then we drove it up there, and then at the end of our stint, we had to drive it back down. I remember that they gave us some specific MRE-type meals that were supposed to be cooked in the vehicle, on the engine kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we would eat them later on. I opened mine up. I was like, you know what? I'm okay. I don't need to eat. It's okay. It's like, this does not look interesting, appetizing, or enjoyable to me. I would rather starve. Thanks.
They're trying to get the car started, and Sam is at the wheel, and Cliff is like, you have to turn the wheel to the side, and then turn the ignition as hard as you can,
as hard as I can.
Yeah, as hard as I can. And that's what I do to start it. And Sam doesn't. He's like, I broke the key off in the ignition. And Cliff's like, I said turn it as hard as I can.
So now they're stuck in the middle of nowhere, and the key won't turn on the ignition. So. Yes.
So they're like, what are we going to do? And
Frasier says he's got a cell phone.
Yeah, Cliff's saying he's got a satellite phone in his car or cellular phone or whatever. He's like, he'll call him. Like, no, we don't need to be rescued. We can do this. Like, so I'll just, and Sam's like, I'll just hotwire the car. And I think he mentioned Buck taught him how to do this when he was with. So he goes to he's over the hood and everything, trying to fiddle with the wires, and you just hear that.
And his feet start kicking up in the air.
He's just electrocuted and kind of falls down. And Cliff is like, Sammy, are you okay? And just that one of those lines, it comes out of nowhere. You're not ready for it. But when it's there, Sam just looks up at it. Diane?
Always on his mind somewhere is Diane.
I do feel like they underplayed their reaction to him potentially being electrocuted, the danger of that.
No. Nobody cares that much.
Cliff is like, yeah, you can't help where it's part of the anti-theft device that is when somebody tries to break in, it
the
automatically
Cliff
locks.
Clavin anti-theft device.
Right. It automatically locks the doors and sets an alarm going off. And they're like, did you say it automatically locks the doors? And Cliff's like, yep, he like pulls it. He's like, although I don't hear the alarm going off. That's weird. And Norm's like, well, let me show you what it sounds like. And he just screams, you locked us out of the car.
And that's when the cell phone starts ringing and Fraser's trying to get to it.
Yeah.
And the doors are all locked and he says, well, I'll just break a window. And, are you kidding me? Do you know how much those windows cost?
And Fraser doesn't miss a beat, just throws a window, smashes the back window. And Cliff is just like, you're going to pay for that, you know?
And the good old-fashioned, I mean, you see it too. It's a block, one of those block cell phones.
It's the size of a tennis shoe, yeah.
Yeah, just holds it up to his ear, and it's the Democratic Party calling for, because they're in trouble.
He's like, we're in trouble too. And of course, before he can even do anything, that's it. Like, that was the few seconds of juice they had. The battery's dead. Yeah. So at this point, then now they're in real trouble and they start to blame each other.
They blame everybody except Norm. Notice that Norm is the only one that doesn't get any blame for anything because he hasn't done a thing except just be there.
Right. Cliff is the one who made them to leave the highway to go on one of these back roads. And then Sam is the one who fell asleep, but he only fell asleep because they made him do a double shift because they were running late and they were behind schedule because Cliff was got stuck in the cavern. He's like, well, I was looking for my buffalo and my Hopalong Cassidy watch.
Got his fat butt lodged in the cavern. I think the word butt is on this script more times than anywhere else in Cheers.
Very, very probably, yeah. And Sam is talking about, you know, how this didn't happen with him and Buck. And Frazier's like, we're just a little bit tired of hearing about your friend Saint Buck. He's like, if he's such a cool guy, why haven't any of us met him? And Sam's like, well, because ever since he got into the Hall of Fame, he stopped returning my phone calls.
So I have to hang around with a bunch of losers in a stupid bar. Does that answer your question, Mr. Harry Man? Oh, I'm sorry, guys. I didn't mean anything by that. It's just that, well, he asked the question.
it's his apology, but it's like, well, you guys wanted to know. So it's like, I'm sorry I said that. It's not untrue, but I'm sorry I said that.
Yeah. Norm kind of brings everybody down and goes, guys, just chill out. Because he's lying on the top of the car by this point. He's like, it's clear, it's fresh. And look at the stars, guys. Look at that. It's got to be millions of them out there. Kind of makes you feel insignificant, huh? And Cliff, yeah, I don't feel anything.
We go back to the bar one more time. Rebecca comes out of the pool room. She tells Frankie that he has to move these big boxes to the other side of the pool room. And he's like, geez, Miss Howe, that's the fifth time today. I'm starting to get sweaty. She's like, well, take off your shirt, you goose.
The way she says that line, she just hits the flirty Rebecca, and it's chef's kiss.
It's so good. It's such a good line. And then we get Paul. Paul Krapitz is there, sitting next to Lilith, talking to her. He's like, you know, he could have gone with the guys, but he just wasn't there when they left. And, you know, they probably tried to call him, but, you know, they hung up when they got his machine. Lilith is not interested in this. Lilith could not care less. And he's like, you're not much of a conversationalist, are you? So.
Where is everybody? Probably New Mexico by now. You know, I could have gone with them if they had left me a message. And then Carlos line. No, I was talking about my nephew and Rebecca of Horny Brook Farms.
And she doesn't like how Rebecca treats Frankie, and she's like, he's a sweet kid who will make a nice woman happy, but until then, it's Carla's job to protect him from sleazy women interested in a one-nighter. And Liz is like, you mean women like you? And Carla's like, ironic, isn't it? Carla gets Frankie out there, and she tells him not to be around Rebecca. And she's like, oh, yeah, she's trouble. She's been with every guy in the bar multiple times.
Michelle, she seems so nice.
And she sends Frankie home, and he says he's going to stop at church on the way home to pray for her soul. And as he like runs out, and Carla's like, how the hell did he end up in my family?
The one pure soul in Carla's family. The one.
And then as Rebecca's going back to the office, Paul kind of approaches her. He's like, oh, yeah, I hear the rumor is you've slept with everyone in the bar. He's like, how come you haven't done the wild thing with Paul yet? And she just rolls her eyes and walks into the office and closes the door on him. He's like, I never get included in anything.
It's a creepy line. And the fact that if Paul wasn't just such a milquetoast of whatever.
Right.
No, it's still a creepy line. I'll take it back. It's a very creepy line.
Yeah, it's not a good look for his character in this short amount of time, but back out on the road now, the guys have started a fire. They're sitting around. Cliff is certain that they're going to die and they won't be found until the sun has bleached their bones. And Sam is like, no, everything will be all right in the morning. And Fraser's like, oh, yeah, in the morning when the desert sun comes up. He's like, by noon, it'll be 120 degrees out.
Yeah, forget it, Doc. You're never going to see 120. At 110, your lungs explode. I was watching this last night. My wife was doing a puzzle and she just chortled very loudly at that line.
Fraser's like, Cliff, that is ridiculous.
Oh, yeah? Would you like to make a friendly wager on that?
And the moment kind of sinks on Fraser. He's like, if they're going to die, you know, he regrets not saying goodbye and I love you to his wife and his son. And Sam was like, well, at least you got somebody to carry on your legacy. You know, if I die out here, I don't have anyone. Fraser's like, you're not going to die alone. You've got us. And Cliff, I got to, this isn't the way I pictured the four of us going out.
And once again, somebody asked the question, how did you picture it, Cliff?
And he's just, well, Sammy, you know, I figured getting killed by a jealous husband.
Fair. Yeah. He's
like, Norm, you know, heart attack.
Fair. Okay.
He's like, and Doc, and Fraser's just like, Cliff, I don't want to hear it.
You bet you don't.
The way he just says that, he's just like, ooh, you're dodging a bullet here. He's like, you bet you don't want to hear
it. It's almost a Woody line. That's almost a Woody line. It really is.
Yeah, it is. And then it's dawn, and the guys kind of like wake up, except Norm is missing. And they're like kind of looking around like, Norm? And Cliff's like, you don't suppose a wolf dragged him off in the night, do you? And they're like, well,
maybe we should go look for him. Not me. I don't want to meet the wolf that can drag off Norm.
But then before long, by which I mean like 1 second later, Norm pulls up to them in a golf cart wearing a bathrobe.
Yeah. Looking refreshed, looking clean, with the smile of smiles on his face. Yeah.
And they're like, where did you get the room in the golf cart? He's like, it came with the room. It's like, what room? At the resort where I spent the night.
It's just over the hill. Yeah, it's just over the hill.
So they're like, you spent the night in a hotel and left us out here, and they are, you know, they're justifiably pissed off.
Yeah, they're ganging up on him. And he just says, you guys want to yell at me some more, or do you want to make the breakfast buffet? It stops in 10 minutes. Well, naturally, and Fraser, well, naturally, the buffet. Just upper crest, all of a sudden, well, naturally, the buffet.
And they climb aboard and head out, and everything is fine. That's where we end it. So, yeah, again, like, there are a lot of fun parts. There's nothing necessarily wrong with the episode, but it feels like, given this premise, there's a lot more they could have done with it. Like, they could have really taken this out and explored some stuff with the characters, and it feels a little bit more of just like a superficial thing, or they touch on things but don't really commit to any kind of, there's no catharsis really that I got out of it. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree with that. Just, they don't have the conclusion that's needed. The only real good conclusion is the one guy who was never getting yelled at by anybody, Norm, he got to sleep in a nice place. And if people were listening to Norm and if people weren't freaking out so much, maybe, you know, he would have taken him with him. But he's like, I could go over there and have a good night's sleep and heck with these guys. So don't blame Norm at all.
And I just wonder if, like, maybe just a moment. I mean, we do get it by the end of that, but I think it could have been a little bit more overtly stated, a little bit more obvious of Fraser kind of realizing, I'm not an inner Harry. I don't have this inner Harry man. This isn't for me. Like, and we've had stories like this where he and Lilith try to cut themselves off from civilization and go live in a cabin. And it's like, that didn't work out. And, you know, when Fraser decided to, like, live, when he joined that motorcycle, this Viper and everything, and, like, he wanted to ride out. And she, he's like, they're like, where are you heading? She's like, California. He's like, that's far. It's like, you know, we have these moments where Fraser acts tough and he acts a lot more macho and manly than he is. And he always comes crashing down. So we knew that was going to happen in this one. But I don't know. We could have just had a moment where he's like, this is stupid. Why did I do this? Yeah. Why did I drag us out here to get us all killed?
It's not the greatest plot for the episode. It's not the greatest setup at all. But it gets the guys out of the bar. It gives us some funny lines. And I did like the scenes back at the bar with just the women and Frankie. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a great setup. And if that was the impetus for the entire episode of just getting them away, and we get this pretty fun little B plot with the girls oogling over the guys and switching that trope on its head, I'm fine with that, actually. I kind of like the B-plot a bit more.
Carla being the more maternal, responsible, chaste even, voice, as opposed to, like, the others.
Again, flipping that on its head, which is fun. That's interesting to see, so...
You called it at the beginning of this episode. Norm only has two beers this episode, and they're right at the beginning, one during the teaser and one right as soon as we come back from the credits. Once they're on the road, we never see him drinking anything.
No.
I was kind of surprised he didn't have some road beers in the back, but I guess they don't show him driving, so it wouldn't have been any, but yeah.
I mean, still, we would have had a scene right out of one battle after another with him drinking a beer and like, whoop, toss it outside.
That brings him up to 943 beers, and for those of you keeping count, he still has a credit of 397 beers from when he painted the office before, so he's still got plenty to play with. Who was your employee of the week? Who was your MVP?
This was hard. Carla had some of the best lines, but I had to give it to Norm, like I said before, for being the only person that I would want to have on a road trip with me.
Okay.
I mean, that's it right there. He looked like he was the one that kind of was enjoying himself the most. He found the resort. He had some good lines too, but I kind of like Norm in this episode being the quiet source of comfort in the insanity that was going on around. And I appreciated that for some reason, so I had to give it to Norm, and I could be wrong on that, but that was just my feeling on this.
Interestingly, I gave it to Cliff.
Yeah?
And I think it's because it's one of those where I so rarely give Cliff the MVP award, but it's just like he was integral, like he's the one who invited himself and Norm along on this trip.
Good point.
He inserted them into the situation that ultimately helped it go off the rails. But he was responsible for some of my favorite beats and my favorite lines.
Yeah.
Like, the home run for me, the best line was when French was like, I don't want to know how you think I'm going to die. And him just, you bet you don't. But then also his capper, when they're all talking about Woody's messages and the postcards, when him just like having a great time on vacation, love Woody. just kind of looks at him. He's like, did I miss something? Like, no, that's all he wrote.
Yeah, I have no trouble. I think you're absolutely correct for that. And those are some great lines, too. I ended up going with the purse gag because just in all, that just made me laugh. Mm. It tickled me. I liked the beat of it. Again, good hit of threes. Two times over there, the girls, and then with Lilith and Rebecca, and then the line of girls tossing their bags down. It hit perfectly. It's like just cherry. Perfect comedy writing right there.
And I have to give a mention, honorable mention, to Sam getting electrocuted and looking at Cliff and going, Diane? Because any mention of her has to be rewarded.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Oh, Rick, thank you for coming back on the show again. This is always a blast talking to you about the show. Where else can people find you if they want to hear more from you?
Well, I've got a podcast called Unpacking the Power of Power Pack, where we review comic books that have a member of Power Pack in them. I co-host the show with my partner, Jeff, who is the only person I have known who has fallen asleep while driving, only to end up crowned the Cornhusker Princess of Nebraska. True story. Also, my daughter's got a comic strip that she is creating, and we share on our website. Just look for Jeff and Rick Present Tales of Tales.
Very cool. Great little comic. That's a story you will have to share at some point. Anyway, yeah, folks, again, thanks to all of you who listen to Cheerscast and support the show by liking and sharing on social media and leaving comments on the website fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon, like Rick does. Cheerscast is supported by the Right On Network, and Jeff and Rick Presents Unpacking the Power of Power Pack. Woohoo! Go to patreon.com/FWPodcast to support your favorite show on the Fire and Water Network. Thanks, everyone, for listening. And until next time, we're closed.
We're going to die out here. They're going to find our bleached bones.
Let's just relax here, everybody. Everything's going to seem better in the morning.
Oh, yes, Sam. In the morning, when the desert sun comes up. By noon, it'll be 120.
Forget it, Doc. You're never going to see 120. 110, your lungs explode.